Brew Strong is brought to you by morebeer.com, where a man can brew like a man.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. Another episode of Brew Strong. I'm here with my...
Am I supposed to talk now?
Yes. Coming in with another rip-roaring start to the show. My good buddy,
okay, here we go.
John the Rock Palmer.
Good morning, everybody.
That's about as weak as they come. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Brew Strong.
That's better. That's almost as good as greetings, cretins. And we have our special guest host in the studio with us today. We got Mr. Jason Petros.
Hey, JP.
Hi.
So we got two JPs on the air now.
That's true.
Same time. Yep. Could be confusing.
But only one is really handsome.
That's right.
Thank you.
John is really good looking.
You're very welcome.
Well, and how you been doing, John?
I've been doing good. Just, usual busy stuff. Been preparing a presentation for some brewers in Argentina last week.
Oh.
And they had invited me to come down to speak at their conference, but just couldn't swing the time away. I mean, you can't go to Argentina for just a weekend.
No.
You gotta take some time down there.
Yeah. Right. The flight is an entire weekend.
Unless you're a senator, and then in that case.
Right.
That's true.
Then off you go. Or is that governor? Governor.
Yeah.
Off to Argentina.
They can do it faster.
And so instead of Argentina, you're doing Nashville. You're going to do the Music City Brew Off, huh?
Looking forward to that. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and I'm going to San Antonio at the end of this month.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah, that should be a good time. Never been to San Antonio before, though. My wife, my sister has lived there for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be neat.
That's a cool little town. I went there for a few hours, saw the Alamo.
That's what I did. The one time I was in San Antonio years ago for a conference or something, or for work, I went and saw the Alamo, went to the homebrew shops, and that was pretty much it. Got back on the plane and left.
Well, at least you saw the brew shops.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. I got my priorities. It's a beautiful place. Would have liked to spend more time there, but trying to mix it in with everything else is tough. But, one of the things you can do, if you want to know where Palmer's going to show up, you want to know where I'm there or where I'm going to be, and I think JP as well, we all got the Facebook thing, and we got the Twitter thing on the internets there, right?
Do they still have the internet? What's happening with that?
I don't know.
It's still around?
I had heard about it a while ago, and I haven't heard much about it since. But, on Facebook there, both John and I are there, and I'm sure JP's there too, somewhere.
Yeah. So you guys aren't the elitist homebrewer type where if I don't know you personally, I'm not going to add you kind of people?
The reason I didn't add you was... it was some mistake. I clicked on the wrong button or something.
It must have been. I'll re-request you. Don't worry.
Okay.
No, over again.
JP's on there, and the Brewing Network's on there, and go ahead. You see us on there. Sign us up as friends, and we'll definitely accept you. And that's a good way to find out what we're doing, where we're going, what's happening.
In fact, you can create separate lists from your friends, such as Jamil, myself, and JP, and give us a name like, say, Rat Pad. And that way you can get a quick, snapshot of all your Rat Pad type friends and see what we're up to.
Yeah, very good. And then on my Twitter thing, what I do is I put the beer that I'm drinking. I do the beers, and then
so you're on Twitter a lot.
Yeah. I'm actually pretty. I'm a lot of updates on Twitter, and you know, I'll put where I'm going to go drinking. Tasty and I went to Sack Brewing last week, and you know, we put that on there that we're going to be down at Sack Brewing. So, you know, you sign up for that, you see where we're going to be, and you know, feel free to come out and join us. And you know, we wouldn't put it out there if we didn't want you to come out and join us. You know, if we wanted privacy, we wouldn't be posting it. So don't be embarrassed about coming out and saying hi.
I'll remember that.
Yeah. All right.
Although I guess I should add that I don't twit or Twitter.
Tweet?
Yeah, tweet. Never got into Twitter.
People are twits. People do or don't tweet.
Okay. Got it.
Don't tweet where you eat.
Yeah. It's going to be another fine show. I can tell already. Problem is, it's a lack of beer. Usually we blame it on the beer, but this time it's a lack of beer. Well, what's our show going to be today, Justin? What's our listener question?
All right, let me play it for you. We had a listener call in and leave it for you personally. Was real excited to talk to you guys, so it's a little long, but it's a very good question. Here you go.
Hey, Jamil and John, this is Steve from Bangor, Maine. Right now, I'm a partial mash brewer, and I'm currently building my MLT to go all green.
Hey, let me play the right one.
John, this is John K. from Minneapolis. I'm a member of the Minnesota Homebrewers, and I'm having a hell of a time washing yeast. I know you've outlined how to do this on many shows, but I can't seem to do it myself. Could you explain your goals for washing yeast? And some other questions you might answer are, how do you collect the yeast from your fermenters or carboys? What kind of residual amounts of wort and trub are left behind? How and when do you separate the trub from the yeast? And what size and type of container do you use to wash the yeast? Do you put it in the refrigerator before or after washing? And what's the yeast sample's time and temperature at each step? And how do you store this washed yeast? What kind of containers do you use? And do you freeze your yeast?
Those are excellent questions. I get a lot of yeast washing questions all the time, so I think it's a good idea for a Brew Strong show. And mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, why don't we take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get into what is yeast washing and how do you do it and why. Back after this.
Smart.
Brew Strong.
This is Brew Strong.
Is everything ready, Igor?
Yes, Doctor. All the preparations have been seen to.
Good, good. Soon the whole world will bear witness to my genius, for we are about to breathe life into a creature that once ceased to be and shall be once again.
Doctor?
Damn it, Igor. Never cut me off mid-laugh.
Sorry, but you were getting carried away, and I...
How dare you! This is the pinnacle of my life's work. Everything my father and grandfather worked for. Everything they...
It's just a conical.
You were no fun. You know that? Throw the switch. Just a conical? It's alive!
Warbeer is scaring up some great deals this month on their very best gadgets, like their carbonating keg lid, stainless steel mash paddle, and their frighteningly durable stainless quick disconnect sets. No matter how you brew, Warbeer has what you need to reanimate your brewery. Bring your gadgets to life this August at Warbeer.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day.
For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted best night spot 7 times and best brew pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tail Wagon Amber Ale and Catherine the Great Imperial Stout, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and happy hour all day Mondays. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub where you'll feel at home.
Organic ingredients. Fresh, clean, good for you, good for the planet. And Seven Bridges has the best selection in the world. Everything is a click away at breworganic.com. Join the mailing list for special deals and regular updates about new products and specials. They have been brewing organic and serving organic brewers for almost 12 years. They can help you brew great organic beer. Take the National Organic Brewing Challenge, the only BJCP-sanctioned nationwide brewing competition just for organic beers. Enter the competition by October 10th for your chance to win great prizes, including a hands-on brewing experience at an organic brewery, brewing equipment, or organic brewing ingredients. Complete details about the competition are online at breworganic.com/competition. Seven Bridges is cooperatively owned in awesome Santa Cruz, California. Everyone there is dedicated to worker and people-friendly business practices and environmentally friendly, worker-friendly brewing products whenever possible. Visit today, breworganic.com.
Ewa, what's it feel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by 2.
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby.
It's the Brewing Network.
Back to your hosts, Jamil Zainasheff and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're talking about washing yeast or maybe rinsing yeast. Washing yeast has its own term, and rinsing yeast may mean something different.
I think rinsing is a little more appropriate to what we normally do as homebrewers.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we start off with why don't you give us a definition of both? What's washing yeast? What's rinsing yeast?
Okay. Well, yeast washing tends to refer to an acid treatment of yeast, where you in a professional brewery setting where they routinely ranch their yeast, store it, repitch it, and so on, and culture it. They need to, after a while, knock down bacteria levels in the yeast mass that they're going to be pitching to the next batch. And because yeast can take a lower pH than bacteria, by acidifying a yeast culture or, a suspended yeast, they can kill off the bacteria or incapacitate the bacteria and use that washing to separate viable yeast from bacteria. In a homebrew setting, we're not going to be reusing yeast as often as in a professional setting. And generally, if our sanitation practices are good, we don't have to worry too much about bacterial contamination, although everybody needs to worry about sanitation. So we can rinse the yeast with boiled water, and that allows us to separate the yeast from the trub. And that's our goal. The listener asked, what's the goal of yeast washing, or in this case, yeast rinsing? The goal is to separate our viable yeast from the trub. And by doing that, the trub consists of hop particles and leftover proteins and dead yeast cells. And by removing the yeast from the trub, you reduce the risk of autolysis. You reduce the risk of off flavors from leftover fatty acids. And by using distilled water, or not necessarily distilled water, but boiled water, you separate the yeast from oxygen, which helps them go into a hibernation state and allows you to save them longer.
Okay, so
before I get too far ahead of everything, that's
right.
Probably.
So, washing, you're lowering the pH to something like, what, 2.1, 2.2, something like that, and you hold it for like 20 minutes, and that'll lower the bacterial population, and it also stresses out the yeast, is my understanding. So,
it's true. Right.
You know, something you can do at home, but, you know, my thought is, you know, if you've got bacteria in your yeast, then, you know, go get yourself another pitch of yeast for $6. You know, it's kind of crazy to do that as a home brewer. You know, a new pitch of yeast is to start with is pretty cheap. So, you know, if you're worrying about bacterial contamination, then, you know, I don't think really yeast washing is the way to go. You might do it for fun, but not necessarily the best thing for the yeast health. And again, you know, probably better to start over. And then rinsing.
I think as home brewers, we're more concerned about, you know, getting more use out of a yeast mass we have in the fermenter.
Well, and rinsing I do all the time. And like you're saying, John, what I'm trying to do is get rid of all that those dead cells, get rid of all that anything other than healthy, viable cells. That's what I want. I don't want all the hot matter, all that junk in there. And then once I have that clean pitch of yeast, I can determine what's the correct amount of that yeast to use in my next batch, and I get better fermentation that way. I don't get dead yeast in my next batch of beer. So, you know, I know a lot of people, they'll do, you know, they'll pitch a new wort on top of an entire cake of yeast in the fermenter. And the problem with that is, even if it's the appropriate pitching rate, is that you have all those dead and dying cells in there. You want to get rid of those and start with, you know, just your viable cells, because, you know, those things are going to, you know, blow up and die on you, and you know,
yeah,
not
you
a
can
good
often
thing.
Get a brothy, you know, taste or smell from doing that.
Well, and you know, it's not huge, but you know, the more you carry those dead cells forward, the worse it's going to be. So, you know, you start with fresh cells. You know, the lysing of the yeast is not a big deal. Really, you don't get very much, and it's. You know, not as much of a problem. All right, so why don't we go into some of the details on the yeast and how you collect them, and what you do with them from there. JP, you've washed and rinsed. You've rinsed yeast before, and you've collected yeast from your fermenters, right?
No,
not at all.
Never.
Oh, wow.
Because I am not that confident in what I'm doing. Handling yeast.
Right.
So I just use the vials. I kind of take, I mean, not financially cheap, but I cheat, in my opinion. You know, I'm starting to get more comfortable now with my process and the way I brew, that I want to start doing starters again. I didn't before because I had three in a row that were infected, just growing stuff. It was worms in it. It was really bizarre. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. But that was like
talking about your stool sample. We were talking about your yeast sample.
I thought you meant washing my quote samples,
right?
No. So for the doctor. So, well, then yes.
Right.
No.
Well,
so
part of it is the environment that you're brewing in, right? You're brewing a place with a lot of grain dust and a lot of you know.
Well, I was at the time
in a warehouse and all that.
I was at the time, but now at home, especially with the conical, I'm able to pull off that yeast, and I've been thinking about, well, I should really be saving it because, you know, multiple generations, it's only going to make it a little stronger, and I'll probably get faster ferment and cleaner ferments that way too. So it's a very timely topic.
Okay. Well, the way that I collect the yeast off the fermenter is, and I'm using carboys mainly now, is I will... rack my beer off, and I'll leave just a, you know, maybe a half liter of beer in there, or
half an inch of beer over the cake. Yeah,
not even that, just enough that I can use it to break up the yeast. Depends on what kind of yeast it is. The less flocculent the yeast, the less liquid I need to break it free from the bottom and shake it up. If you're using something that's real cheesy, like the English strains tend to be, then you need a little more liquid to kind of to bust that up. But the reason I use very little liquid is I want to put it all in one container. I want to put it all in like a liter polypropylene bottle that I can autoclave, and I get that thing sanitized. And a liter or 2 liter, or sometimes I'll use, you know, a couple of 1 liter ones. And those go through the autoclave. The top of the carboy, I will, you know, douse that with alcohol, with a, you know, a 70% alcohol solution, and I'll flame it, and then I'll, you know, swirl the carboy up, and then I'll dump the contents of that into the plastic container. And at that point, I label it, I put it in the fridge, I leave the lid slightly loose just in case there's any off-gassing that's going to happen. I want to have an explosion in my fridge. And I put it there, let it settle, and then I'm going to worry about rinsing it. How about you, John?
Yeah, I do it pretty much like that, too. I tend to brew in carboys, and after I'm done racking, I often, you know, I'm typically fermenting 6 gallons of beer and then transferring it to a corny keg. So I'll often have, you know, as you say, a liter or two of beer left in the bottom that I just got no room for. Depending on how much swirling is needed, I don't swirl up the whole carboy. Maybe I'll take slowly get a little motion to get the top layer swirling around, mm-hmm. and just pick up, you know, the first, you know, quarter, half inch of yeast and get that moving. I'm trying to leave all the trub that's down on the bottom of the carboy, and you can see it. That's the nice thing about carboys. You can see that dark layer at the bottom. You don't want to swirl that up if you can help it. And then you pour that into a jar. I tend to use mayonnaise jars, glass mayonnaise jars. You can put the lid on and put them in the microwave with a little bit of water and heat sanitize them that way.
Yeah, problem with any glass container is you got to make sure you don't seal it off with a tight-fitting lid that can build up pressure and shatter the jar.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I do it differently then, because I take everything that's in that carboy, swirl the whole thing up, and
put
that
in.
Okay. And that's one of the reasons that I really
depend on the
rinsing, because I want to make sure I get rid of all that stuff. But I don't want to leave behind, I don't want to take too shallow a cut of the yeast.
True.
One of the things about the yeast when they lay down in that carboy, on the bottom, you're getting the quickest flocculating yeast. So the ones that flocculate better, they're less attenuative. On the very top, you're getting the ones that are least attenuative, the ones that don't tend to drop out of solution there, are least
flocculent
and
more
attenuative, and they tend to stay in solution longer and drop to on the top. If you keep selecting that very top layer of yeast, the less flocculent, the more attenuative yeast, eventually you will get a really dusty yeast that won't flocculate at all. And it can happen in just a couple of pitches. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of surprised the first time that happened to me. And I was talking to Chris White, and he's like, oh, yeah. He goes, you know, you repitch once, and you can see that. I'm like, wow, really? And sure enough, it can happen that way. So I like to get the whole thing. I think the important part about harvesting the yeast, and let's kind of cover that a little bit here. If you're using a carboy, you want to sanitize the top of the carboy. You want to work in a dust-free environment, or, you know, you don't want to have
still
dust
air.
Settling, still air, or, you know, rising flame to, you know, keep the dust from settling. And then, you know, a sanitary container to put the yeast in. And if you can sterilize it, even better.
True.
And work quickly, but don't freak out. You want to just get it into the container without dust falling in there. So keep lids on things while you're preparing, and then only open the lids at that last moment as you need to transfer the yeast.
Well, Jamil, you were saying that you use an autoclave, and Palmer, you said you use a microwave. So if we don't have access to an autoclave, I don't know many homebrewers that do, microwave is fine? Even though you were saying, try not to use glass because it could, blow up. Maybe soaking it in star sand, is that good enough to do this kind of thing? Or Because that's my main thing is I don't want to put it in a you know, obviously a bacteria environment. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure whatever I'm putting my yeast in is clean.
If you have something that's heat-proof, like these polypropylene containers, you can actually just pour boiling, you know, get your tea kettle, fill it up, get it boiling, and pour it in there, fill it up with boiling water, put the lid on, and then, you know, invert it a couple of times. You know, fill it like a little more than half full, and then, you know, tip it over and get both sides. And if you have it boiling for, you know, to where the outside of the container is getting hot,
that's good enough.
Yeah, it's very sanitary. It's not sterile, but you're all right. You know, all the things that you can't kill in that short contact time, there are molds and spores and things like that that don't tend to really grow in beer. So not as big a deal.
Okay.
If you're collecting off a conical like you have, JP, then, you know, the trick, I think, you know, when I was using conicals is to really make sure your valves and all that are very sanitary. You've sanitized them. Prior to filling this thing with wort to ferment, you've taken those valves apart and boiled them and all that stuff and put them back together. And then, same sort of thing. Sanitize it, spray some sanitizer on it, and then, open the jar at the last moment, rack it off of there. With the conicals, I tend to, if you've already transferred the beer, then you can kind of slosh it around and get the yeast off the walls, because a lot of the yeast tends to stick to the walls, and it depends on the strain of yeast, but that can be tricky getting all the yeast out of there. Otherwise, you tend to get just a center plug out of the middle of that yeast. Which is still pretty good. You know, at least it's a representative sample.
That's that creamy white stuff, right?
Comes shooting out the valve, yeah.
Yeah. The second generation, right? Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what we're shooting for when taken from a conical?
Yeah, you know, when commercial brewers are harvesting, they're trying to pull that middle layer, that middle third. So the bottom third they discard out of the fermenter. Mm-hmm. They harvest the middle third, and then they discard the top third, which is, you know, the
powdery.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that, and if you're using a bucket, you know, you'd rack off the bucket and then you'd swirl it and pour it just like you would a carboy. It's just, yeah, obviously have a much larger opening there. I guess you could harvest it with a spoon or something like that, but, you know, the more you leave that lid open, the more you're digging around in there, I think the worse off you are. One of the reasons I like carboys, actually, is one of the same reasons you hate them, is it has a narrow opening at the top, and, makes it hard to clean inside, but, you know, if you take the top off of it, you've got less surface area that's collecting dust that get in, and, you know, all that dust carries bacteria, wild yeast, things like that you don't want in with your other yeast. All right, so we've got it in the container. Now, what is it we're going to do to rinse the yeast? What's your process, John?
Well, it starts off with cooled boiled water. And the reason we're using cooled boiled water is there's two reasons. One, you want to get all the oxygen out. And the reason you want the oxygen out is because without oxygen, the yeast is not going to attempt, you know, aerobic metabolism. When at the end of fermentation, the yeast build up their glycogen and trehalose reserves, which are like starch reserves, and, you know, helps them hibernate. That's their fat store, you know, for the winter kind of thing. And if you expose them to oxygen, then they're going to start using those reserves and, attempt to, you know, come out of hibernation. So you want to avoid the oxygen and to help them stay in hibernation for storage. The second reason is that you don't want any external nutrients in the storage medium. Again, if you provide them with food, they're going to try to come out of hibernation, and that food, you know, will run out and they'll end up dying on you and you can't store them as long. So by going with cooled boiled water, you're denying them oxygen, you're denying them food, and they stay hibernated and they stay viable longer in the refrigerator.
Okay. So what I do is I actually autoclave water in mason jars, so I have sterile water at all times.
Oh,
and then I'll add one of those to. I'll have my container.
That just doesn't surprise me, man. I have my water flown in from the Swiss Alps.
You should have sterile water on hand. You never know. You could be needing to do some operations. You know. God knows.
The baby,
you know, brain surgery.
Yeast washing.
Get him into the operating room. Yeast washing. So I'll take my container of yeast. Now, I've put it in the fridge for a couple of days, and the yeast portion and the tube portion has settled to the bottom, and I will decant off the beer that's on top. And usually it's like, maybe one-third on the bottom, two-thirds at the top. Decant that off. And then I'll add back sterile water, and I'll shake that up in that container. Now, one of the questions people have is like, well, how big a container? And I've had people, one guy I worked with in particular, and for some reason I can't remember his name. We've exchanged like 50 emails about yeast washing. You got to make sure you have enough room in the container and enough water to really break up the yeast. You don't want big chunks of yeast. You want to thin it out enough that the heavy bits can quickly drop to the bottom, and all the little chunks of hop crusties, all those little black the brown hop hop bits and resins and proteins and all that stuff. You want those little chunks to drop to the bottom. The dead cells will quickly drop to the bottom, and the creamy good yeast is going to stay up in the liquid a little longer.
So all those little stuff are in like let's say English yeast when it really blobs up like that. It's not just yeast. It's also
right. So, yeah,
crap.
There'll be
okay.
crap mixed up in there. And so you shake it up, violently, and break that stuff up into smaller bits and pieces. And there's probably not a lot in there, but Fix, I think it was, he estimated only 25%. I got it on my website. Only like a quarter of this stuff is a quarter of the stuff is non-yeast. It's, it's just junk. It's other stuff than, the yeast that you want. Fats, hops, other bizarre stuff.
Yeah. Let's bring up this point, too, that we're not taking vast amounts of yeast out of the carboy. Maybe, 2 cups at the most. I mean, you're not trying to preserve the entire or harvest the entire viable yeast mass in the carboy. You just want to get a sample.
I mean, the whole thing.
Well, but that could be like a gallon worth of material to try to fit in a flask.
From a 60-gallon carboy with 5.5 gallons of wort into the carboy, I will harvest all that off into one liter Nalgene bottle.
Okay.
And then, sometimes, it'll spread into two, and I'll use 2 1-liters, and I'll do them half and half. But why don't we do this? Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we will get into, some of the tricks of the trade of rinsing yeast. Back after this.
Keep your carboy cap on. This is Brew Strong.
We'll be right back.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Hell or High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty crack cans.
Tasty crack cans.
BN Army members, are you looking for a discount on hops? Keep listening. Nico's Homebrew Supply at NicoBrew.com has hops by the ounce and by the pound. Choose from varieties like Amarillo, Centennial, East Kent Goldings, Holler Tower, Simcoe, Summit, Tomahawk, Warrior, Willamette, and more. And adding new varieties all the time, many for less than $20 a pound. Whether a couple ounces at a time or an 11-pound bag, all hops are shipped vacuum sealed and frozen straight to you. Nico's Homebrew Supply offers store-wide $5 flat rate shipping and won't waste your money on unnecessary overhead or advertising. They're going bare bones and passing the savings on to you. The staff at Nico's Homebrew Supply loves to brew and is committed to keeping homebrewing affordable and accessible to anyone who wants to join in this great hobby. And for a limited time, use coupon code BNARMY at checkout for a brewing network discount. Visit NicoBrew.com. That's NikoBrew.com for your hops and more. NicoBrew.com. Your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
White Labs, your source for maltose mowing monsters, announces the White Labs Platinum lineup for 2009. Looking for out-of-the-ordinary yeast to make the best beer possible? The Platinum strains from White Labs are only available for a limited time and make your homebrew stand out. Through February, find Australian Ale, Essex Ale, and Dusseldorf Alt Yeast. March and April, it's Nottingham Ale, Abbey 4, and Mexican Lager Yeast. And May through June, don't miss Premium Bitter Ale, Belgian Wit 2, and Belgian Bastogne Ale Yeast. Keep up with all the great yeasts in the White Labs Platinum Program at whitelabs.com, where you can also join the White Labs Customer Club. Brew with the freshest and most unique yeast with the White Labs 2009 Platinum Strains. White Labs. It's all in the vial.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking about rinsing yeast. So harvesting that yeast from your fermenter, cleaning it up, getting rid of the undesirable bits, and then being able to reuse that yeast in your next batch. One of the things that we were talking about is what kind of vessels you use and, you know, how much water ratio you need. I like to have at least, you know, two-thirds sterile water to my, you know, one-third cake of yeast. And by, you know, having that kind of ratio, I can shake it up. I get the you know, the separation of the bits and pieces, all the little crud drops to the bottom. And after about, you know, 10 minutes of that, of letting it settle, 10 to 15 minutes, you'll see black bits and, you know, all the other break material and dead cells and all that stuff will be on the bottom. And the top should be, you know, just an even, creamy, milky-looking yeast slurry. And what I'll do is I'll decant that to another sterile container. And then that's the yeast that I'm going to be using in my next batch. I'll let that settle out and, you know, I can, you know, decant the water if I want, or I can, put into a starter, or do anything like that. How about you, Palmer? What's your technique for this?
It's much the same, really. I mean, I guess I'm not as thorough in stirring up the entire fermenter as you are. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I do try to get, you know, a good cross section of the yeast when I swirl up the fermenter, and I will pour, you know, say 3-4 cups, you know, maybe a quart into my container. And again, as you say, I'll let that settle, let the black bits settle out for, you know, a period of time, 5-10 minutes, and then I'll decant off that the cloudy mass that's mostly suspended yeast at this point, and put that in another, you know, sterile container or sanitized container, and then start rinsing that with more boiled water. Because I do want to get the yeast rinsed. I want to get it off the beer to a large extent.
You want to do that before you're storing it at all.
Yeah.
See, I do the opposite, and one of the reasons I do is, the beer, which we assume is, that's as clean as that yeast is going to be as the beer. I go ahead and store it with the beer, and it's okay. Supposed to be a decent storage medium for
it is
for the,
yeah, it is it for the yeast. There, and I guess maybe I haven't done the side by side to compare, but there's good arguments on the internet one way or the other where by keeping them in sterile water you can keep it longer than under some concentration of beer, but probably a small difference.
Yeah, there is a storage technique. You take like a test tube, like a slant tube, and you put just a touch of cells in there, clean, sterile. You plate your yeast, get yourself a single colony, grow it up, put that into a test tube, and then you put distilled water in there, sterile distilled water in there, and the yeast will store quite a long time in that method. And so I guess that maybe there's some similarity there as far as this goes. And when I'm selecting the entire yeast mass out of the fermenter, and I guess maybe you're having more liquid left over. What I'll do is when I'm racking off of the fermenter, I will once my keg's full, if I got any additional, I run that off into a separate container, and until I'm down to just a little bit of liquid over the yeast, and that's why I'm able to get the whole thing into one liter container. And one of the reasons I'm selecting the entire yeast mass is I like to, now I've got three full pitches of yeast for other batches of beer. And I see your technique. I think that would work too, especially if you're just trying to get a pitch for one.
Yeah,
next
that's
batch.
The thing. I'm just going after one. I'm not going after three because right. I don't brew as often as you do.
Right. I like to once I have that yeast, go ahead and do two or three batches with that yeast right after that, and because that repitching that yeast. It's great. It really ferments well, does a great job, so I kind of like that. So we both kind of separate the troop from the yeast by shaking it up with sterile water, and decanting. And you can do this a number of times, as many times as you want until you feel it's as clean as possible. I usually need to do it once. If you got enough water to yeast ratio, those heavy bits drop out pretty quick, and you'll see a definite buildup at the bottom.
I think people get hung up on how clean it has to be and what the color has to be. Mm-hmm. And we're not trying to win a contest here. It's simply we want to remove.
My yeast is cleaner than your yeast.
Yeah. We want to remove the trub, and we want to get a good percentage of healthy, viable cells separated from the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. So that the slurry that you separate and decant off, it can it's going to be hazy. It's going to be anywhere from the color of wood, to some light beige to maybe even the color of light peanut butter. But the more you rinse it, the more you can separate the whiter yeast cells, and that the color of the suspension will get lighter.
Sounds a little racist to me.
It's very German of you.
Yeah. Well, a good healthy yeast cell, if you've separate them, you'll see that the yeast is much lighter in color than and it darkens as it ages.
Right. And also if you've been brewing a real dark beer, you can rinse out all those flavors, those roasted flavors. And one of the reasons people talk about repitching from lighter beers to darker beers, less hoppy to more hoppy, lower alcohol to higher alcohol. I mean, there's reasons for that, but you know, if you rinse your yeast, you actually kind of remove a lot of the flavor of, you know, those roasted grains. Now, it's, quite a bit of it is inside the cells, and you know, they'll still have that flavor. But and you know, hop resins, the isomerized alpha acids will actually coat the outsides of the cell, and you can't really rinse those off. But it does help considerably if you're getting rid of that beer there that has all that flavor and replacing it with sterile water. You've actually mitigated a lot of that flavor impact of repitching yeast from the previous batch. So I've gone, you know, from darker to lighter and all that stuff, and it really hasn't been a problem. You know, maybe in the best of breweries, you would you know, plan it out and go to darker or whatever, but not as critical once you've washed the yeast, rinsed the yeast.
Do you find any sort of negative flavor profiles coming from a yeast that has fermented an IPA, let's say, and then you want to do a pale ale or something, like if you don't go hoppy to hoppier, because, like, you know, as you said, some of those acids are still coating the yeast. Do they only contribute just a bitterness and you can't really tell, or is it like a, you know, like an older hop cheesy kind of thing?
It's all isomerized alpha acids generally. And so it contributes mainly a bitterness. But the biggest impact, flavor impact of harvesting and repitching yeast from a really hoppy, really bitter batch of beer is that it impacts the viability of the yeast and their ability to bud. It's the same reason that, you know, hops have been used to fight against bacteria and things like that. Isomerized alpha acid, like, it coats the bacterial cell, and then it can't replicate. You can't get more. So that's it. It kind of slows it down. It reduces the viability of the cells. It does the same thing to yeast. So that's kind of the main concern of that. But you know, you take that and put it in a starter that has no hops in it whatsoever, and you grow that, and you get another batch. You know, you can go ahead and you know, kind of revitalize that yeast. I wouldn't worry about it too much. I think you know, some of the stuff I'm real picky about, like fermentation temperature and, you know, the progress of fermentation temperature. But, you know, certain things, there's some leeway there that best options might be one thing or another, but I think there's some flexibility.
It's not like every cell is going to have the acids on it, right?
Coats everything evenly.
Oh, really?
I mean, you know, but not perfectly evenly across every cell. And, you know, they're still able to ferment after that. So, yeah, certain cells can't handle it as well, I'm sure. You know, it depends on the condition of each individual cell. And, you know, there's always cells that are, you know, dead and dying. And the important thing about this is, in every ferment you do, at the end of fermentation, there's cells that are already dead. There are cells that are on their way dying. There are cells that, you know, a whole range of things. And you want to get rid of all that crap. And you want to just have your healthy yeast if you can. You know, does a lot for your fermentation. All right. Why don't we take another quick break? And when we come back, we'll wrap up with a few more questions about rinsing yeast. Back after this.
Smart.
Brew strong.
This is Brew Strong.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The more beer deal of the day.
Announcing the Beer, Beer, and More Beer Deal of the Day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess,
the More Beer Deal of the Day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something.
Find the More Beer Deal of the Day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
In the past year, the Brewing Network has been able to add two new shows, expand our studio capabilities and quality, and bring more beer information home to you than ever before. In no small part, this is due to subscribers like you. Thank you from all of us at the Brewing Network. Without your monthly support of any denomination, we could not bring you the very best in live beer radio like Can You Brew It?, Brew Strong, and The Sunday Session. Haven't signed up yet? Join your fellow brewers in the BN Army. Sign up today at thebrewingnetwork.com for a recurring donation as little as $2 a month. Besides all the great live radio you'll support, every subscriber is automatically entered in monthly raffles for amazing brew gear like a conical fermenter, a temperature control system, or your own draft setup. Become a part of the BN Army today.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty crispness you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
This is www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Like the Lance Armstrong of the beer world. Except for that nut thing.
This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're talking about rinsing yeast, a great subject for Brew Strong. A lot of people have questions about this, and one of the questions that our listener had was, all right, do you put it in the refrigerator before or after washing? Now, I put it in before washing. As soon as I harvest it, I put it in the fridge because I'm lazy. I let it all settle out, decant the beer, and then I add the water back and shake it up. He also was wondering how much time between the steps. So I put it in the fridge, wait a day or two till it settles. That allows me to get rid of the spent beer, add the sterile water, shake it up. It's about 10 to 15 minutes before all the bits settle to the bottom. I decant to another container. Now I'm ready to go ahead and pitch into whatever my beer might be that I'm making. Or I can go ahead and put that back in the fridge and store it and, use it in a few days. How about you, John? What's your timing like on these things?
Pretty much the same, except I'm usually doing the first decant the same night. Typically, after pouring it from the carboy into the first jar, I'll give it, 15 minutes or so to get the trub to settle out to the bottom, and then I'll pour off the first suspension to another jar, and then stick that in the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I misunderstood you, but I think I'm doing that first decant right away. Mm-hmm. Rather than letting it sit in the fridge for a couple of days, mm-hmm. just because I've got more time at that right then, and then I can, after a day or so, I'll do a rinse with water, decant off spent beer, mm-hmm. rinse with water, and then put it back in the fridge. So, and then I'll just leave it in the fridge there for months.
I guess the difference would be you tend to do a settling and a decanning right after harvesting the yeast, and I don't do that. I just wait until I'm going to add my water.
Right.
Okay. And then storing the yeast, you put that back in the fridge. Sometimes I'll go ahead and store the harvested yeast with the beer on it for the longer amount of time, and then I will go ahead and rinse after that. But you tend to do the decant first. As far as storage temperatures go, you want this as cold as possible without freezing the yeast. That's the ideal. The colder it is, bacteria doesn't have much activity, and the yeast don't have much activity, so they're not burning up their reserves. So I have a fridge that I keep around 34 degrees, and that's where I put the yeast.
Yeah, that's... I stick it in the fridge also, and it's my keg fridge, so it's tends to be warmer. It's like 40 as opposed to down there towards freezing. But the yeast will stay for several weeks. I think right now I've got an Erlenmeyer flask in there from that's about 2 months old. Mm-hmm. And it's still just a very light brown color, which is, perfectly viable. Pitch that to a starter and I'm off and running.
Right. There's a few things that can happen in storage that, want to be aware of. If there's any bacteria in there, which there is going to be, the longer you store it, especially if you're storing it warmer, the bacteria will be multiplying and you will end up with more bacteria in that slurry. The viability of the yeast is dropping during that time. They are using their reserves. Their health is dropping. They're going to be less ready to ferment. And you can also have mutations that occur during that time. And, the longer the storage, the worse off you can be. So, while these may work, you want to be careful about, storing them for too long. The best thing is if you can go ahead and, repitch that, within a week or maybe two. The sooner you can do it, the better off you're going to be, the better ferment you're going to get. So you just want to be careful. If it's a long time, you might take a selection from that, grow it up in a starter, and see how if the starter seems normal and smells normal and all that, then you'd be okay. But I tend to harvest and store all the yeast from all my batches, and then I'll come across yeast that's like a year old. And one of these things, I just dump it out. You could probably use it, but unless it's some strain that's really hard to get a hold of, it's better to just start yourself a fresh pitch, I think.
Right. Yeah, it's the whole, as with many things in brewing, it is forgiving. Use your eyes, use your nose, gauge the health of the yeast. If it's turned dark brown, then it's too old. Don't bother. You're going to get a lot of autolysis flavors mixed in. If it's still light brown, it's good, and you can pitch to a starter and get a good healthy starter going from it.
So what you're saying, if it's brown, flush it down?
Yeah. There you go.
If it's light brown, keep it around.
If it's white, then it's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Is there a rule of thumb, like timeline-wise, for too long? Is 4 months too long? Is 2 months too long in general? Or
I think that's an excellent question. And it depends on how healthy the yeast was to start with before you began fermentation, the health of the yeast after the fermentation, and the strain. Different strains have different
shelf lives.
Shelf lives, yeah. For me, the California ale yeast, the 1056, that'll actually stay for a long time. It stays pretty healthy for a long time.
Yeah.
You can actually hold on to that for quite some time. The yeasts like all the wheat yeasts, all those Bavarian Hefe yeasts, they tend to go south like in a week. And if you don't use them within a week, you're in real trouble. They just either they're totally dead or they don't ferment right or whatever. And I've never heard the yeast companies say that, but what they talk about is lager yeast. They say, oh, the lager yeast are real temperamental, and you know, they won't store for more than a couple of weeks. So that's what they say. I've had better luck with lager yeast than I've had with the wheat yeasts. The English ale yeasts tend to be somewhere kind of in the middle there. They'll, you know, so Cal Ale 1056, that's good for at least a month, 4 weeks or so, maybe 6 weeks. You know, the English ale yeast you get maybe, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And the lager yeasts, I guess about the same. And then the wheat yeasts, 1 week, 2 weeks max. At least that's my experience so far.
I've successfully used them, you know, 2 and 3 months after, you know, of storage. But again, I, you know, like I said, I'm taking precautions in terms of oxygen exposure. You know, I'll fill up the container with sterile water.
Yeah.
So that
well, and let me reduce. All right. So let me qualify this. All right. I can take yeast that's been in storage a year and I can use it.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm talking about is the time frame, JP's asking is, you know, what's kind of the best buy date? You know, when, yeah, I could still use it after that, but when do I really want to have it done by? And that's what I'm talking about. I think, you know, mutations and, you know, just the yeast
bacterial
dying off, things like that.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of time frames I'm talking about.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people on the internet, they're like, oh, no, I used yeast a year later. Oh, don't worry about it. It's like, well, you know, there are reasons to worry about it. And,
yeah,
you know, if you get your ingredients real cheap and you're, you know, you're not paying $30 for, you know, or $35 for your ingredients for a batch of beer, then, okay, yeah, go ahead and take your chance. But
yeah, well, and if your time isn't worth that much.
Right. Yeah. Right. Your time, all your effort, you know. Go ahead and throw in whatever yeast, but
yeah,
if you're, you know, otherwise, it's best if you're not going to use that yeast, you know, relatively soon, you know, go ahead and get yourself a fresh pitch of yeast and start over. I think, yeah, I think you'll do much better that way. I think
that's true.
You
yeah.
know, so, yeah, it's not the end of the world, but, you know, try and use that yeast early, no matter how many precautions you might take. Okay. We got questions from the chat room.
Yeah, a few questions. A lot of different ones about you know, different solutions to use other, you know, other than water for cleaning. But here's one about a chemical also. Brett emailed us in. He wants to know if anyone's ever used chlorine dioxide tablets to kill any bacteria in a slurry, you know, before repitching.
Again,
no.
Yeah, and I've read about it. I haven't personally done it. And, you know, the whole thing is, you know, even that's stressful for the yeast. And if you're that concerned about bacteria that you're going through this whole thing, I would just, you know, start with a fresh pitch.
Yep.
Okay. And then, like I said, questions about different solutions to use. Dressel is in the Dressel Brews in the chat room, and he wants to know about using light beers to wash yeast instead of sterile water.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, that's and the theory goes that you know, Bud Miller Coors, it's pasteurized, so there's, you know, no bacteria in it. Those are pretty shelf stable, and the carbonation helps. I've tried this before because a friend of mine was telling me about this. You know, and the carbonation helps separate out the, you know, the better yeast from the bad yeast. And I really didn't see that being the case. I get much better results with water because you don't have all the foaming. And the foaming just makes a mess, and it's just a real pain in the ass. So I'd
rather boil up a tea kettle of water than, you know, suffer the embarrassment of being seen buying Bud at the store.
Again, second time that day.
That photo showing up on the internet again.
Like a Bigfoot photo.
I'd pay good money for a photo sent to us of Palmer buying Bud at the store.
Preferably a security footage.
Yeah.
That would be even better.
Looking over his shoulder.
Caught on tape.
Adjusting his skirt and his high heels.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Now, how about yeast cell counts? Chlorophenol is in the chat also, and he wants to know, you know, how do you know how much viable yeast do you have? Are you guys doing cell counts when you collect these and wash them?
Well, all right. So, you know, viability is a really tricky thing to estimate. But, you know, over time, if your practices are the same and you're, you know, you're repeating these things, you can kind of learn, you know, where you're at. And you can go ahead and count these. Now, I have done plenty of viability testing and cell counts of my slurries in the past. And the numbers that work for me are in the pitching rate calculator on MrMalty.com. And so it kind of assumes that at harvest, you're, you know, at a certain percentage, you're at maybe 100%, and it quickly drops off from there over time. And so, you know, it really depends on, you're probably more like, you know, 95% or something like that, you know, or in the low 90s when you harvest. You know, your average beer, your average health starting out, you're kind of around that point. Okay. And then it drops off from there. So, you know, figure 90%.
Okay. Another solution question. A couple people in the chat asked about using wort to separate instead of water.
No.
No.
Okay.
You don't want something with a thicker viscosity. So anything with dissolved sugar is going to be thicker. And, you know, that's going to... You want that that nice thin water to let everything drop. And that's why you want to add a lot of water. You know, you're going to... If you have 100 mils of yeast, you want at least, you know, 300-400 mils of water in there, you know. And, you know, the more water you put in there, the easier it is to separate the stuff out.
Okay. Okay, and with that water, you had mentioned boiling it. So someone wanted to know, how long are we boiling water? They know that you're not sterilizing it, but to get rid of the O2, the different things you talked about, how long are they boiling water to use?
A couple minutes.
That's it? Just a couple minutes? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't have any technical reason for a long period of time. I mean...
The legal reasons time is 15 minutes.
Yeah. Right. I think there's information on the internet that says if you boil for 10 minutes, you've achieved this amount of kill.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just... You want most of the air is coming out as it comes up to a boil. As it starts to boil, the air is gone.
Yeah, boiling liquid doesn't hold any gas.
Yeah, so just a couple of minutes and then let it cool.
Okay, now a couple questions came through about what kind of pitching, kind of comparing the different styles of pitching, doing starters, etc. So someone, Special Ed in the chat room asked, when doing a big brew, like a double or a triple bock, is it better to use washed yeast over new starters? I mean, how do we make that choice?
I'd say new starter.
Yeah, I'd go, it depends on what you're doing. I prefer going with a repitched yeast, just because... you know, when you get into that third generation, fourth generation, boy, those yeasts are just cranking along. They're I don't know exactly what it is, but they are dialed into your brewery and they will just go gangbusters and, you know, better attenuation, a lot of different things like that that I really don't just get from starters.
Yeah, I agree with Jamil there. I think I misunderstood. Maybe I thought that he meant just simply pitching the washed yeast alone to the beer, which he probably didn't mean. But yeah, definitely, I agree with Jamil.
And just to clarify that, Jamil, have I heard you guys say before, you know, when you're repitching, you want to be coming from lower gravity beers to higher gravity beers? You wouldn't maybe take the third generation of a bunch of bocks because that yeast might be a bit tired and used.
Although, if you're making bock after bock after bock, you know, it's the same recipe.
Okay.
I think you're okay repitching for that.
Yeah. You've acclimated the yeast to that kind of beer.
Okay.
And but, it's a question of harvesting healthy cells and pitching healthy cells to a good starter, building up the right pitching rate, and then going into that style of beer.
Yeah. And, you know, and you can just repitch directly. I have good success with that as well. One of the things that Michael Lewis was talking about at the homebrew conference this year was, you know, selective pressure. And, you know, he was talking about how if you have a beer that turned out with a great beer, harvest the yeast from that and reuse it. And then, you know, every time, you know, a beer turns out great, harvest the yeast and reuse it. And, you know, just put that selective pressure on it so that, you know, the yeast is going to be making the beer that you like, and the beer is going to turn out the way you like. You know, if you start, and, you know, with everybody's brewery and the way that you do things, the yeast, you know, it favors some yeast cells and doesn't favor some others. And brewer's yeast doesn't mutate that fast, but you know, selective pressure is an interesting thing where you can, you know, by selecting the yeast that you like the results from, you know, it favors the kind of results you like. So, you know, that's one of the beauties of repitching is you kind of get your yeast dialed into what it is you do and what you do in your brewery. So I like, and especially since it's very difficult to build up. And here's, you know, you could do this from a starter and it's just fine. The reason I don't like doing the starter is because it's a lot of starter to build. If you're going to brew 5 gallons of Bock, right, or Doppelbock, for it's a lager, a high-gravity lager, you need a lot of frickin' yeast for that thing. And you're essentially going to be making 5 gallons of a starter, you know, some lower-gravity starter. So you might as well just brew a beer and use the yeast from that, and you know, make a Munich Helles or something, and you know, an easy drinking, you know, session lager, and use the yeast from that for your Doppelbock.
Okay,
you know, and or you can make just a buttload of starters.
Mm-hmm. All right, here's another comparison question: what do you guys consider better, yeast washing or yeast top cropping?
Oh, well, this is, you know, that's an interesting question. That's, I mean, two totally different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think if you get enough yeast from the top cropping for what you're intending to do, then top cropping's better.
Okay.
Well, better for what, I guess? You know, it depends on how you're set up, I would imagine.
Right.
You know, if you have a carboy, how are you going to top crop?
You know, carboy cap, you know, you put the racking cane in, and then just pressure ferment will blow it out. You know, you plug up the other line on the cap, and just let it blow out into a jar. You kind of like a vacuum cleaner. Or you can actually inject, you know, CO2 very carefully, a very low pressure, into one line, and, you know, you move the end of the racking cane around through the yeast that's on the top, and it'll just blow it right out through there into a jar.
Using like one of those carboy caps?
Yeah. And
maybe like, you know, a sanitary air filter kind of blow in there.
Yeah, you could do that too. Yeah. Although I don't trust those filters 100%.
Well, no, they're 99.98.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, CO2 I trust because nothing's really living in that CO2. You know, 100% CO2. So, of course, that's not 100% CO2 either, is it? It's 99.9.
So you're screwed either way.
No, but I think, you know, if you can top crop, you know, McDowell does a lot of top cropping, but he uses buckets, right, for fermenting, and or then it just scoops it with a spoon and all that. And so, you know, that works really well. You know, that yeast is kicking. That yeast is, you know, at peak, ready to ferment. You toss that into another beer, it's off and running.
Do you need more of that top crop yeast than you would, or less rather than a washed or rinsed yeast? I would imagine, right?
Well, technically yes, but you know, there's a certain minimum. So it really has to do with viability, right? So the yeast that you're top cropping, 100% viable. That's perfect viability. I mean, there's probably some that aren't. You know, some get carried up that are, you know, dead for some reason. But call that 100% viability. When you harvest a yeast and for repitching, figure like 90% viability. Mm-hmm. So you'd need at least 10% more yeast for that. And, you know, the yeast have to go through their cycle and get built up. The thing is, I wouldn't, depend on top cropping so much and viability of that so much that you underpitch and then have a lot of growth in order to get to the right amount. You know, excessive growth, you know, ends up with more esters, fusel alcohols, things like that. So, of course, not enough growth ends up with more esters and fusel alcohols and things like that. So, you know.
See, that's what scares the hell out of me about doing, about messing with yeast like that. Because I don't know. Is there some, I don't know, recommended level that you are in your brewing where you would say, no, you're not quite
fourth
ready
level
to do
ninja
it.
Master.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? Like, let's say I'm just doing extract for a year and it really interests me to do it, but maybe I'm not at the level of my process. Not saying, you know, extract is less than all grain, but there's a certain amount of process more in an all grain, certain more time investment and all that. I don't know. Does that train you maybe to be able to pay attention to handling yeast like that?
I think that's an excellent question. I think an excellent point. I think, you know, one of the things that happens is people, you know, they go to all grain, and at the same time, they start to do things like starters and, you know, repitching yeast and all this stuff, and they end up, you know, brewing better beer, and they say, well, it's because I went to all grain. It's like, well, no, you make excellent beer with extract. I think we've all done it, right? And it's really based on more, you know, sanitization, you know, fermentation temperature control, things like that. But when people go to all grain, they decide they're going to spend some money. And they, you know, they'll spend money on fermentation temperature, or, you know, pitching the right kind of yeast. A lot of times they go from dry yeast to liquid yeast cultures. You know, all those things tend to add up to better beer. So I think, you know, when you're starting out, you know, you start out with an extract and specialty grains. You should get yourself, you know, a kettle big enough to, you know, boil the full wort in. And then you should be focusing on fermentation temperature and you know, yeast, pitching the right amount of healthy yeast. That should be like your next step right there. And then after that, you can worry about all grain. You can worry about, you know, conical fermenters, all that stuff.
My response to your question, JP, would be that if you have enough experience brewing infection-free beer where your sanitation processes are good, then I think you can go and experiment with yeast pitching and yeast washing and, you know, starters and all that, because you've got the baseline. You know how to keep things clean. You know how to keep things, you know, separate. And you can go into that being confident that you're only changing, you know, that one variable. You're not, you know, having, you know, sanitation problems entering into your process.
Makes sense.
Well, that's a good point. I think, though, that, you know, you want to make sure you have the proper pitching rate because that'll help you with sanitization problems. you know, and yeast health will help, you know, overcome some of those problems.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think before you get into repitching, you better make sure you know how to keep things sanitary, because otherwise, you know, you're shafted. It's gonna be.
I think your comments at the beginning of the show, Jamil, where, you know, spraying the neck of the carboy and make sure it's sanitary when you pour. You know, they got the sanitized containers. You know, still air. You know, doing a room where you can be confident that you're reducing your risk, all that's going to help you, you know, help ensure your success with yeast rinsing and reusing yeast. I think you can do it. I don't think you need to be an all grain brewer. I think you can be an extract brewer and doing this also.
Yeah, and it'll really improve the quality of your beers.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, and the last thing from the chat is a clarification. They're complaining to me that I screwed up the wort question about using wort to wash the yeast. They didn't mean to wash the yeast. I guess what they meant was, could they make a wort starter, pour it into the carboy, so that the starter now is actually in the carboy rather than taking the yeast out of the carboy, and then pour off the actively fermenting starter?
You can. I mean, you're...
Now you're not washing anything. You're just making another starter, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, there's also, well, I guess, you know, the amount of bacteria that's in there is, you know, the same amount of bacteria is probably going to be in here. Although the bacteria tend to, you know, be consuming the, you know, the, well,
I honestly don't know, I don't understand why you'd want to do that. I mean, I don't see the...
Well, if you added enough starter liquid into that, onto that yeast cake, right? And then the cells that are living and active, they're going to go up into suspension into that starter liquid. And they're going to be in suspension. And then you decant that, leaving behind all the crud on the bottom.
It's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Would you worry about all of that trube and nastiness on the bottom once you pour that yeast starter in, kind of swirling up and kind of burying the active cells? I would think it would kind of constrain.
Yeah, it'd be a tough pour, tough way to decant.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Yeah, but, you know, once that you get your starter active, I mean, you go swirl the whole thing up with...
No, I mean, before it's even act... Well,
right.
Starter. Yeah,
yeah,
okay. I'd say
you add that liquid in there, and it stirs everything up on the bottom. I'd shake the whole thing up. I'd get break free everything from the bottom with some starter wort, right? And get that thing all mixed up. And then... You know, the thing is, you need it to be you need to have a little bit of a column to let some of that stuff settle out. And then the carboy, I'm not sure. So, I mean, you could do this in another container even. You know, just pour it into a gallon container or whatever, you know, with some starter wort.
Three-gallon carboy or something.
Yeah, and mix it up real good. And then, you know, wait, you know, a certain number of hours and the yeast are going to become in suspension and the crud will still be on the bottom.
Yeah.
And then you could decant that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see why you couldn't.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
although, you know, you tend to have so much yeast there that you don't really need to make a starter with it.
Yeah, that's what kind of where I was coming from.
You know, if you're going to let it sit for a couple of weeks, then maybe you want to make a starter with it. But if you're going to use it within a week, there's really no need to make a starter with it. You repitch that yeast. It's ready to go.
Okay.
It's still, you know, in the upper 80s of viability at that point.
All right, and that's it from the chat room this week, guys.
Great. All right, so we covered yeast rinsing, not yeast washing necessarily, but yeast rinsing and how you go about that. And the reason why you would yeast rinsing is you know, cleaning out the bad stuff out of your reharvested yeast, getting rid of the break material, the trube, the bits, the Braunhof,
the dead cells,
all that crud. And then, you know, we talked about how you would add the sterile water and shake it up to break that apart and let that stuff settle, how you'd store it. And we talked about some other intriguing options for doing that. And I think it was a good show overall. I think our great sponsor, More Beer, www.morebeer.com, they made this show possible. If you like this show, you know, you ought to tell More Beer that you like them, because they actually made this possible for you to hear. They're good guys, good company. They've got a great website, www.morebeer.com. They also have more coffee, more wine, a whole more flavor group of companies, and they are experts in everything that they do. I said, you know, why not more hand jobs? And they go, well, no, we want to do stuff that we really know really well.
We're not good at that yet. We're practicing.
They're practicing.
Yeah.
So, they're fantastic guys. Great products, great prices, great service. Give them a buzz when you need something for your brewing. And if you're listening live, stay tuned for talk about fermenters, comparing the different fermenters and how you use them and advantages, disadvantages. And until then, brew strong.
Brew strong, everybody.